We certainly want to thank you for coming out and being with us today. We recognize the fact that we have many visitors here today. We certainly count you our, we always say, our honored guest, and that's true. And we hope that you'll linger for a little bit after the services are over, that we can get better acquainted with you. I am very pleased for the work that is going on here, the activity that's going on. I appreciate the fact of those that took my place last week when I was away preaching. Good to be back with you in the pulpit once again. Appreciate those that are especially teaching on Wednesday evening. We just have a number of men that are volunteering to teach on Wednesday evening. This study is getting ready to come to an end. And another study will begin in the month of September, and I think we're going to even add more men to the schedule there as far as teaching, and that's just a wonderful thing to be able to do that, especially here at Gardner Lane. Also, good to see the number of grandkids that are out today. It looks like a number of children are here with the grandparents today. And that's always a wonderful thing to see the kids from time to time, to see how they've grown. And certainly that's certainly a wonderful happening as well. Wednesday night, as I was on my way to worship service here, Jackson was in the back. I don't know if Jackson, he had wanted to go to the zoo on Wednesday, but didn't get the chance to go to the zoo or to the science center. So as a little 7-year-old boy, I don't know if he was sort of agitated or not, but he asked the question to us as we were making our way to services on Wednesday evening. He said, "Papa," he said, "when is the last day of church?" Now, he understands there is a last day of school, and there might be a last day of some other thing, but he wanted to know when was going to be the last day of church. And we tried to explain that to him the best that we could for a child. And that's what I want to talk with you just about for a little bit this morning, and that is about how God wants us to worship. A lot of times we have some misconceptions about this, and over in John chapter 4 and in verses 19 beginning, John chapter 4 verse 19 up here on your chart, it says, "And the woman said to him, 'Sir, I perceive that you are a prophet. Our fathers worshipped on this mountain, and you Jews say that in Jerusalem is the place where one ought to worship.' Jesus said to her, 'Woman, believe me, the hour is coming when you will neither on this mountain nor in Jerusalem worship the Father. You worship what you do not know. We know what we worship, for salvation is of the Jews. But the hour is coming, and now is, when the true worshipers will worship the Father in spirit and in truth, for the Father is seeking such to worship him.'" Says in verse 24, "God is a spirit, and those who worship him must worship in spirit and in truth." They stayed on the internet, at least. We've gotten to the point now that everything that we see on the internet we believe to be true now. The internet can't lie to it. But I was reading this concerning how many people attend some type of worship service each week from the Barna Group or the Barna Study. And this is a study that's polled churches for several decades now. And it talks about that there are probably about 100 million Americans who attend some sort of a worship service on a given week. So when I read something like that, I read that evidently these people believe, wherever they're going to a worship service, that worship is important to them. Even you go into third world countries and you'll see the people there, maybe tribes, and you'll see them worshiping something. And so you understand that worship seems to be important to a majority of people. When we look at Psalms and in chapter 122 and in verse 1, Psalm 122 and in verse 1, this is one of the songs of the ascent as they are making their way, up to Jerusalem to worship the Lord. It says in Psalm 122 and in verse 1, I was glad when they said to me, let us go to the house of the Lord. Worship is something that people have been engaging in, it seems like, since the very beginning. In Genesis chapter 4 and in verses 3 and 4, it says, in the process of time, it came to pass that Cain brought an offering of the fruit of the ground to the Lord. Abel also brought of the firstborn of the flock and of their fat. So people all over the world are worshiping some sort of a deity. In fact, the Apostle Paul writes in 1 Corinthians and in chapter 8, 1 Corinthians chapter 8, beginning in verse 3. 1 Corinthians 8, verse 3, it says, but if anyone loves God, he is known by him. In verse 5 and 6, it goes on to say, for even if there are so-called gods, whether in heaven or on earth, indeed there are many gods and many lords. Verse 6, yet for us there is but one God, the Father, from whom are all things, and we exist for him, and one Lord Jesus Christ, by whom are all things, and we exist through him. When Paul was visiting Athens in Acts chapter 17 and in verses 22 and 23, Acts 17, verses 22 and 23, it said, then Paul stood in the midst of the Areopagus and said, men of Athens, I perceive that in all things you are very religious. For as I was passing through and considering the objects of your worship, I even found an altar with this inscription, to an unknown God. Therefore, the one whom you worship without knowing, Him I proclaim unto you. So we see even at this point they were engaged in worship. They were engaged in worship in some form or in some fashion. Now I want us to stop and just think about this for a moment. When you consider worship, when you consider gathering in a collective sense like we're worshiping God, what do you think, ladies and gentlemen, is involved in worship? We talk about the five acts of worship. And if we're involved in the five acts of worship, especially on Sunday, the first day of the week, then we are pleasing God. Now the word worship, whether it's in the Greek or whether it's in the Hebrew, seems like it's basically the same meaning in both. It means to bow. It means to pay homage. It means to do obeisance. When we get to the English word worship, it has an interesting etymology because it comes from the Anglo-Saxon word worth-ship. What is God's worth? What is God's worth? Well, here in worshiping God, maybe sitting in a church building, doing prescribed things, maybe three times a week like many of us do, We want to go back, first of all, to the Samaritan woman in John chapter 4 for a minute. John chapter 4. It says here in verse 19 and 20, the woman said to him, "Sir, I perceive that you are a prophet. Our fathers worshipped on this mountain, and you Jews say that in Jerusalem is the place where one ought to worship." So they had an interesting conversation about worship. The Samaritans worship in one place, and the Jews, they worship in another. The Samaritans, they worship the Samaritan Temple, Mount Gerizim. A place where the children of Israel built a stone altar after crossing the Jordan River. Maybe called Mount Ebal as well. Later during the time of Nehemiah, the Samaritans built a temple there according to Josephus. Or in view of the Samaritans, Mount Gerizim was the scriptural location for worship. Now concerning that of Jerusalem, worship was to be a designed place or a designated place chosen by God. Deuteronomy chapter 12 talks about that. The temple was built under God's direction in Jerusalem in chapters 5 through 8 of 1 Kings. And in the view of the Jews, Jerusalem was the scriptural location for worship. But back now to John chapter 4 for a minute. What is Jesus, what is he saying here concerning this? In verses 21 through verse 24, it said, "Jesus said to her, 'Woman, believe me, the hour is coming when you will neither on this mountain nor in Jerusalem worship the Father. You worship what you do not know, and we know what we worship, for salvation is of the Jews. But the hour is coming, and now is, when he says that true worshipers will worship the Father in spirit and in truth, for the Father is seeking such to worship him. God is a spirit, and those who worship him must worship in spirit and in truth.'" So we need to stop and listen to what Jesus is saying. And what he's saying is there's going to be a point in time to where people are going to stop making pilgrimages to Mount Gerizim or whether to Jerusalem to worship in the temple. But I just want to look at this for just a few moments this morning as we talk about what's involved with true worship. First of all, we see that worship is supposed to be in spirit. This is very, very fundamental, very foundational. Our worship needs to be in spirit, for God is spirit. God is not isolated in Mount Gerizim. God is not isolated in Jerusalem. We see over in Psalm and in chapter 139, Psalm 139. And in verse 7, Psalm 139, and in verse 7, he asked the question. Psalm 139, verse 7. "Where can I go from your spirit, or where can I flee from your presence?" There's no place that I can go on the earth and be distanced from the Spirit of God. And since God is a spirit, then worship is not going to be confined just to a building or to a temple, but rather it's confined to the human spirit. It emanates from the human worshiper. Turn over to Zechariah chapter 12. Zechariah chapter 12. This is toward the end of the Old Testament. Zechariah chapter 12 and in verse 1. It says in verse 1, the burden of the word of the Lord concerning Israel. Thus declares the Lord who stretches out the heavens, lays the foundation of the earth. And then it states here that he forms the foundation, or that he forms the spirit of man within him. He forms the spirit of man within him. Over in Genesis and in chapter 1 and in verses 26 and 27, Genesis 1 and in verse 26 and 27, in the very beginning as he was busy creating, it says, then God said, let us make man in our image according to our likeness. Let them rule over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the sky, over the cattle, over the earth, over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth. And God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him, male and female, he created them. We are a spiritual being. We are housed in a temporary body. Over in Hebrews and in chapter 12 and in verse 9, Hebrews chapter 12 and in verse 9, it says in Hebrews 12 and in verse 9, furthermore, we had earthly fathers to discipline us, and we respected them. Shall we not much rather be subject to the Father of spirits, or of our spirits, and live? Over in Acts chapter 17, we just read a moment ago in the context. In Acts 17 and in verse 29, Acts 17 in verse 29, it says, being then children of God. Jesus has something to say about his spirit, or the Holy Spirit has something to say about Jesus' spirit. And John chapter 11, in the death of his friend Lazarus, he says in John 11 and in verse 33, John 11 verse 33, when Jesus therefore saw her weeping, the Jews who came with her also weeping, he was deeply moved in spirit and was troubled. Down to verse 38 it says, so Jesus, again, being deeply moved within, that being evidently in his spirit, came to the tomb. Now it was a cave, and the stone was lying there against it. We see over in Ecclesiastes, we're just getting ready to finish up the book of Ecclesiastes on Wednesday night. In Ecclesiastes, and in chapter 12, and in verse 7, Ecclesiastes chapter 12, and in verse 7, it says, then the dust will return to the earth as it was, and the spirit will return to God who gave it. And then again in Romans chapter 1 and in verse 9, Romans chapter 1 and in verse 9, he states there in verse 9, for God whom I serve in my spirit. There's something else we see here, and that is that of truth. He says in John 17 and in verse 17, John 17, verse 17, sanctify them in truth, for your word is truth. Or in 1 Corinthians and in chapter 11, 1 Corinthians chapter 11, a passage many times we read when we get ready to partake the Lord's Supper. He says in verse 23, for I received from the Lord, which I also delivered to you, that the Lord Jesus on the night he was betrayed took bread. And when he had given thanks, he broke it and said, this is my body, which is for you. Do this in remembrance of me. And in the same way, he took the cup after supper, saying, this cup is the new covenant in my blood. Do this as often as you drink it in remembrance of me. For as often as you eat the bread and drink the cup, you proclaim the Lord's death until he comes. Therefore, whoever eats the bread or drinks the cup of the Lord in an unworthy manner shall be guilty of the body and the blood of the Lord. And I think what we're dealing with here is that of an irreverent attitude. So when I talk about worshiping in truth, when I worship in truth, I have to reverence God. We talk about reverence. We're talking about those things that are holy. Irreverence means making those things that are holy unholy. So I need to reverence God in my worship as I am worshiping in truth. And we don't have a problem with the truth part. We'll turn to passages and prove the points about truth to people in denominationalism. We don't have a problem with that. But at the same time, when it comes to our own worship inwardly, are we worshiping in truth? Or is my mind somewhere else? As I speak to one another in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, am I doing that? Or am I just going through the motions as far as my mouth is concerned, but my heart is far from God? These two we know. Now let's go a step further. Dignity. He states in 1 Corinthians chapter 14 and in verse 40, all things must be done properly or decently and in order or in an orderly manner, the New King James Version says. The word decently means with honor. And the word order means with dignity. Ladies and gentlemen, this might be a big light to come on, but worship is about God, not about the worshiper. Worship is about God. It expresses an attitude of his worthiness. We sing a song sometimes. I think it's in the new song book. I know it's in the old one. Worthy, worthy art thou. And if I make worship what I can get out of it, then I have a very shallow understanding about worship. If I have the carnal attitude like sometimes you hear with people, maybe in other congregations, that the carnal attitude that I just didn't get anything out of worship this morning. What I'm saying is then worship is about me, not about God. It's about me. Now the question is, what do we need to do about that? Well, we see the evolution of worship from where God first desired it, maybe in phase one over here, that we talk about true worship, the purity and transparency, the prudence and dignity. But finally you get over here to this point, maybe in phase six, that you're dealing with idolatry, you're dealing with self-worship, you're dealing with an ungrateful heart, because all you're looking at now is, what's in it for me? What's in it for me as far as worship is concerned? And Malachi chapter 1 and in verse 6, it says in verse 6, The son honors his father, and the servant his master. Then if I am a father, where is my honor? Where is my honor? Another that we can look at is reverence. We talked about it just a moment ago. In Psalm chapter 89 and in verse 7. It says, a God greatly feared in the council of the holy ones, and awesome above all those who are around him. Collectively, is our conduct such that we know that the Master is among us? We see over in Acts chapter 10, as they were dealing with Cornelius there, in Acts chapter 10 and in verse 33, Acts 10 verse 33, it says, so I sent for you immediately, and you have been kind enough to come. Now then, we are all here present before God. We are present before God. Over in Exodus chapter 3 and in verse 5, when Moses was going up on Mount Sinai, and the Lord told him, take off your shoes, for the ground you stand on is holy ground. It wasn't the dirt was holy. It was that he was in the presence of God. Now, in Matthew and in chapter 26, Matthew chapter 26 and in verse 40, it says Matthew 26 and in verse 40, and he came to the disciples and found them sleeping and said, so you men could not keep watch with me 1 hour. You couldn't remove the things of your life for me for 1 hour. I saw this cartoon somewhere. It says when he returned to his disciples and found them texting, can you not keep watch for 1 hour without texting? Can you come here and worship God? That's who the focus is on, ladies and gentlemen. The focus is not on me, it's not on you, although we receive some benefits from this. We are built up in the most holy faith. We are encouraged. There is a joyful nature that comes out of someone worshiping God. But this is about God. Can you not spend 1 hour and not get out your phone and text to somebody for 1 hour while you worship God? Or have we got to the point that we cannot even give God, we can't even give God 1 hour of our time? Last point here, and the lesson will be yours. That's holiness. In Matthew, and in chapter 18, and in verse 3, as he is dealing with the subject of stumbling blocks in the very beginning of the chapter, he says in chapter 18 and in verse 3, truly I say to you, unless you are converted and become like little children, you cannot enter the kingdom of heaven. Back over, we looked at 1 Corinthians 14 several times, but back over to 1 Corinthians 14 again. And in verse 20, it says, "Brethren, do not be children in your thinking, but in evil be infants, in your thinking be mature." In James, and in chapter 4, and in verse 8, James chapter 4, and in verse 8, he says in verse 8, "Draw near to God, and he will draw near to you. Cleanse your hands, you sinners, and purify your hearts, you double-minded." Talking about a spiritual life and a secular life. On Sunday morning, I'm going to come in and I'm going to turn off my secular life. My secular life might be that of immorality. My secular life might be that of drinking. It might be that of lying. It might be that of doing this and that, as we see in the works of the flesh. But on Sunday morning, I'm going to come in and I'm going to turn off that life, and I'm going to be righteous for some 2 hours, or maybe 3 hours, or maybe even 4 hours a week. But the rest of the week, I'm going to be as evil as possible. And ladies and gentlemen, don't be naive. That happens all the time in the Lord's church. In 2 Corinthians chapter 7, and in verse 1, 2 Corinthians chapter 7, and in verse 1, 2 Corinthians 7, verse 1, it says, "Therefore, having these promises, beloved, let us cleanse ourselves from all defilement of the flesh and spirit, perfecting holiness in the fear of God." He states over in Isaiah chapter 1, as Isaiah is dealing with why the Lord is going to leave them. In Isaiah chapter 1, and in verse 15, he says, So when you spread out your hands in prayer, I will hide my eyes from you. Yes, even though you multiply prayers, I will not listen. Your hands are covered with blood. This vain, this empty, hypocritical worship cannot hide the crimes of this nation. Therefore, I'm going to close my eyes. I'm going to shut my ears. He says over in Amos, and in chapter 5, in Amos chapter 5, and in verses 21 through verse 24, Amos chapter 5, and in verse 21 beginning, says, I reject your festivals, nor do I delight in your solemn assemblies. Even though you offer up to be burnt offerings and your grain offerings, I will not accept them. I will not even look at your peace offerings of your fatlings. Take away from me the noise of your songs, and I will not listen to the sound of your harps. And then he says in verse 24, let justice roll down like waters, and righteousness like an everlasting spring. Is the Lord pleased with your worship? Is he pleased with my worship? Are we worshiping him, or are we trying to worship ourselves, please ourselves, trying to entertain ourselves, trying to be as happy as we can with our worship service and leave the Lord out of this? That's what seems like you see sometimes. Maybe with yourself. Maybe with others. It's 1 Timothy chapter 2, verse 8, last passage, and we'll quit for today. 1 Timothy chapter 2, and in verse 8, It says, therefore, I want the men in every place to pray, lifting up holy hands without wrath and dissension. The idea is not to just hold your hands up. I see that sometimes on TV with people in the worship service where they hold their hands up and they're just swaying back and forth. That's not the idea of the passage. The idea of the context is you lift up pure hands. Your hands are pure before God as you are making your way to worship God. Not that I'm just doing this for some show or some show of hands. Worship, ladies and gentlemen. Worship, ladies and gentlemen, is just a little bit more than coming here two or three times a week. And yes, it's important to fulfill those five acts of worship. But you have to do it. You have to do it with the right heart. As a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. We would encourage you right now that if you need to respond to the gospel, to come now while together we stand, we sing.